Welcome, I'm Matt Martin, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. In December, San Francisco Mayor Ed Lee announced plans to launch a new city department to end homelessness. With an annual budget of about $220 million, the mayor aims to permanently end homelessness for at least 8,000 individuals. Tomorrow, the brand new Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing will open its doors, and its mission is to, quote, make homelessness in San Francisco rare, brief, and one-time through the provision of coordinated, compassionate, and high-quality services. Its director will be longtime housing advocate Jeff Kosicki. Kosicki is a nationally recognized leader in innovative homeless services, has over 20 years of experience managing nonprofit organizations in San Francisco's, and over the last month, he's been gearing up for his new role and transitioning out of his old job as executive director of Hamilton Family Center. And that's a nonprofit that provides homeless prevention services and emergency shelter and housing assistance. All week long here on Your Call, we have talked to old and young people who are homeless themselves or transitioning out of it. And we have talked to service providers and advocates. And several of them, when we asked them, have had good things to say about Jeff Kosicki. One of them said he's not a PR guy. He is an expert on housing. And today, Jeff Kosicki joins me in studio to discuss the approach that he and the mayor are foreseeing for the Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing. And he's also going to be taking your calls, your questions, your ideas. This is an opportunity to talk with somebody who's really on the edge of a really big initiative here in San Francisco for an issue that matters to a whole lot of people in the city and in the Bay Area. We'll be opening up the phone line shortly. The number to call, 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. There has been a coordinated media effort around issues of homelessness this week. If there are issues or questions or ideas that you garnered from what you've read or heard or seen from that coverage and you want to talk to Jeff Kosicki about them, this is a great opportunity, 866-798-TALK. You can also email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. Jeff, thanks so much for coming into the studio and being here.
Thanks for having me. I feel like a PR guy this week. There's been wonderful media coverage, and I just want to give a shout out to the local media for doing such an extraordinary job of covering this issue, lifting it up, helping educate the public, and a special shout out to all of you here for bringing in voices of homeless individuals as well as advocates whose voices sometimes aren't heard enough when we discuss these issues.
Well, it's been really good to have some time to really talk and to open up the issues because they're complicated. They're not just local issues, and so we want to have the big lens and then talk very specifically about solutions. It's also an opportunity to really learn about how the systems that serve and address the homeless population who try to either keep people from being homeless or helping them find permanent housing, how they work. Your new job is really about a reorganization of city services around homelessness. And I think that a lot of people may just not know how it currently works. So tell us, you know, how things work right now and why what you're planning might actually improve the situation.
Sure. Well, first of all, I think it's important to understand that San Francisco has done an amazing job addressing this issue, which was really caused by federal and state policies, but it's been left to the local governments to address. Despite what folks are seeing on the streets, the number of homeless people in San Francisco has actually gone down significantly since.
And over what time period?
You know, in the late 90s, early 2000s, there were about 10,000 homeless people on the street, and today there's less than 7,000.
But those numbers have been pretty consistent for a while, right?
I think for the past 4 or 5 years, those numbers have been consistent. But if you compare us to cities like Los Angeles and Seattle, New York and D.C., they've all had double-digit increases in homelessness in the past 2 years. San Francisco's had a 4% increase in homelessness. And I don't think saying we haven't gotten too bad is an acceptable reason to celebrate. However, I think it's important to understand that the work that we've been doing has indeed been very successful. Also, I know that people throw out the number, oh, we spend $241 million a year in homelessness and there hasn't been much success. I would like to remind folks that's only 3% of the city's budget being spent on what most folks think are the number one problem in San Francisco. So given all of these factors and the difficult housing market we operate in, I think that we've done a very good job.
And you know, you talk a little more about what – when you say you have a good job, obviously you have people just kind of anecdotal, visceral response is seeing there's lots of people, major tent encampments, these kind of things that don't seem like, this doesn't seem like part of a of the kind of city we want to be part of, we want to live in. So what, how, I mean, as someone who has really been involved in delivering services, how to get people's idea around the idea that there have been some successes?
Well, I think the numbers that I just stated sort of bear that out. However, there has been an increased invisible homeless on the streets, absolutely is true. And I think if, essentially if people's perception is the problem is getting worse, then it's getting worse. I think people who live in this city or work in this city or have businesses in this city have a right to be able to move safely through their neighborhoods. And, people who are homeless have the need, and we have a responsibility to help them get into housing. But I think there's some factors, drug use, especially heroin, is on the rise in the city. We have a situation where a lot of places where homeless individuals used to be camped out or hunkered down in are now development sites where we're building much needed housing and office space in the city. I think there's also the fact that most of the services available for homeless and extremely low income people are concentrated in District 6. Mostly, in the Tenderloin and south of Market, which are right next door to our major shopping district, our tourist districts, our financial district. And all of this has conspired to make the problem more visible. And then there's this issue with encampments that has a relatively, a newer phenomena that has really grown recently. I'm very frustrated with that situation, and it's certainly something we're going to focus on addressing.
So you're kind of now the kind of flag bearer for this mayoral initiative, reorganizing services within the city. I think there are a lot of people who are just skeptical of mayoral initiatives around homelessness because there have been a number of them. Now, I mean, you might argue there's been some successes in that process. But I mean, I just kind of think about that kind of mission statement of your department. That sounds like a very, very big thing to take on. So explain what just are the fundamental changes that are happening organizationally, and then how you think that can actually ultimately get to that place.
Yeah, I think there are two major changes that we need to make. So the city has all these wonderful programs, both run by city employees, and some of them are most of it provided by wonderful nonprofit organizations that have been on the cutting edge of addressing homelessness, not only in the U.S., but internationally. We need to take all those programs and operate them under a single strategy, rather than having 50 different organizations sort of running in 50 different directions, rather than making it so that homeless people have to get in multiple lines, sign up on multiple waiting lists to get services, be assessed, 15 different times by 15 different case managers. We need to bring all that together. We need to have a system where if you are homeless, you're assessed once. That information goes into a single system that is used by all service providers in the city. And we'll direct you to the appropriate resource, and then we'll be able to track an individual or family through the system to help make sure they're getting the appropriate resources that will lead to exits to homelessness. That doesn't really exist right now, but we will have that up and running hopefully within a year, and I think that's going to make a huge difference.
So does that mean that the city's the kind of intake process or that first kind of – does that mean the city is organizing that, or that nonprofits will be putting that information into that central database? How does it work?
So the city's going to be organizing the system. We're working right now on developing a plan for the department and really digging into numbers to understand what the needs are, where the gaps in the system are. We're going to take that information and develop a system. We're going to use, hopefully, not hopefully, we will be using cutting-edge technology that will allow us to develop these data systems that the city will be operating, will be, working with private sector partners who we'll be contracting with to develop and then operate certain parts of the system. And then the nonprofit organizations who we contract with and the city staff who do direct services will all use this system together to be able to both help each individual in a very holistic way, but also to look at the whole system and see where are we doing well, where are there problems, are we seeing an uptick in family homelessness, is this program really successful, so that we can react in real time to what we're seeing happening out on the streets.
But how much of the problem to this point is that we don't understand what the problem is, and how much is it that there's not the will to, say family homelessness? I know that's something that is on the rise. It's something that's been, we've seen that increasing You know, how much of it is about just a kind of like, oh, a will to go, like really go after those problems? Because obviously you're going to have the data side of things, but then there seem to be some intractable things.
I believe that there is the will. I don't know that we have all the resources we need, which is why we're putting a sales tax three of the members of the Board of Supervisors are putting a sales tax measure on the ballot. And $50 million of the funding will go to scale up some of these successful programs. So I think that there's the will. I think we need more resources. But I also think we need to be smarter about how we address the problem. Like, right now, when people talk about homelessness, oftentimes they just sort of lump everybody into one bucket, the homeless. It's much more complex than that. There's youth homelessness, family homelessness, seniors, people who are chronically homeless, high users of the medical system. They all have very different needs. They all need housing, but how we get there is different for each population. We really just need to break down the problem into digestible bites, if you will, and then just start working at them and, you know, chipping away at it. It's not going to be easy, but we need to do it. And we do spend a significant amount of money on the problem, and we need to spend it better. Just by example, a few years ago, I believe Mayor Lee committed to ending chronic veterans homelessness in San Francisco. And we really did exactly what I said. It was in many ways a microcosm of what is to come. Went out, really understood the problem, understood what the gaps were, how much more housing we need, marshaled the resources, brought that online, and sometime in 2017, we will be able to announce that we have effectively ended chronic veterans homelessness in San Francisco. We'll do the same thing with families, with youth. I think it's going to be much more challenging with the chronic single adult population, but we need to approach it the same way.
That's the voice of Jeff Kosicki. He's our guest today on Your Call, and he's also the new head of the new Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing here in the city and county of San Francisco. We are having a week-long series on homelessness, its causes, and also real solutions to it. Jeff is going to be launching this department tomorrow. He's been doing a lot of planning and also a lot of talking to the public in the past few weeks. And this is your opportunity to talk with him, have your voice heard about these issues, what you think the real solutions are, what questions you have from someone who's been steeped in this work for a couple of decades. The number to call is 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. Or you can email feedback@yourcallradio.org. That's feedback@yourcallradio.org. I'm Matt Martin, sitting in for Rose Aguilar. I wanted to ask about a couple of elements of what you've been laying out as kind of what the priorities will be and directions that you'll be going in with this department. And I'm going to kind of ask about these two separate things together because I want you to tell me how they fit together. One is the expansion of the navigation centers, which are places where it's a lot more than a shelter and allows people to come off the streets and live in a very different way than they would in what we normally think of as a shelter, and I'll let you describe that. But also is the idea of housing first, where we're not simply where the idea is give people a place to live first and then think about what kind of services they need for them to really be on their feet and be self-sufficient. So tell me about how those two things line up with one another in your mind.
Sure. So as far as the navigation centers go, they are essentially low barrier to entry shelters where people can come in with their pets, with all their belongings, with their partners, with their friends. And once they get there, the hours are less restrictive in terms of their ability to come and go. If for some reason they don't come back one evening, they don't necessarily lose their bed right away. A more flexible environment, but also an environment where there's a much richer services package that's available in some of our shelters. We have city staff there who are providing medical assistance. We have staff there helping people get on benefits like Social Security or general assistance, if that's the appropriate way to go, and access to job training programs, mental health treatment or substance abuse treatment programs, as well as we work really hard to develop a housing plan for all of the folks who end up in the navigation centers. And to date, I believe it's 85% roughly of the folks who have gone through the navigation centers have ended up with some sort of housing exit.
So there's one in operation now, and you opened a second one this week?
There's two in operation now. One just opened yesterday. We are working on a third in the Dogpatch neighborhood. But I also want to point out that the navigation centers, again, are really a microcosm of what the whole system should look like, right? A system where it's very easy to access, where it is very customer-focused and meets the demands and the needs of people on the street, and that is driving folks towards housing. That's the way the whole system needs to work, and we're actually, you know, calling it a navigation system is what we're trying to create that will essentially work the same way as a navigation center, but we want the whole system to operate that way.
And Housing First?
So Housing First is this idea that was back in the day when it was kind of being launched. It was in the mid-'80s, mid to late 80s. Initially, there was this concept that we need to get people housing ready. They need life skills training programs, or we have to get them a job, or we have to, you know, put them into a shelter and then a transitional housing program and a substance abuse treatment program, and then there's sort of this long pathway to housing. It's Housing First is the idea that the solution to homelessness, there's only one solution, and it's a home. And the best thing that we can do is invest our resources in programs and services that will ensure that people are getting into housing, essentially to invest them in housing. For some folks, that means permanently subsidized housing, where there's wraparound support services to help them maintain their housing and to become stable and use that as a platform towards self-sufficiency. In some cases, it's a rent subsidy. In some cases, it's connecting them with a family member who's willing to take them into their home in some other community, as long as we make sure that there's somewhere there on the other end who can receive them and that they can make a safe journey. That's another type of housing exit. All of this is part of the Housing First model.
So I'm going to go to callers in just a moment because a lot of folks want to talk to Jeff Kosicki, new head of the Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing here in San Francisco. I guess when people in the Bay Area hear Housing First and you talk about like, well, what we really need to do is get people into housing, the question is, where is this housing?
Right.
Do we have evidence that even if there were the resources to provide those subsidies, this, you know, kind of things that are created by nonprofits or these things through family and friends, is there really reason to believe that there's a place for these folks?
Well, let me just talk. You know, we need to be creative. We need to not think the same way that we have. We need to look at all of the, you know, arrows in our quiver, so to speak, around our housing resources. But just as an example of what we did when I was at Hamilton Family Center, you know, there's 1 in 25 students in the San Francisco Unified are homeless. It's became the problem essentially nearly tripled during a relatively short period of time. And when I started working there, that was everybody said there's no housing for anybody. So what we did was instead of throwing up our hands, we decided to hire real estate agents to come onto our staff, people who knew how to talk to property managers, knew how to source real estate. And they have been able to find housing at the bottom 20th percentile of the rental market in the private sector, who are willing to accept the rent subsidies that we were offering to these families. We went from housing about 60 families a year to over 250 families a year. We more than tripled our output with only twice as much money by just being smarter about how we use our resources and to not just give up just because things are difficult.
I want to go to our first caller here who is calling in on your call. Saman in Palo Alto, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead.
Great. So with government at somewhat of an impasse with regard to adequately funding, you know, the budgets necessary to address this this problem, and with so many nonprofits essentially competing against one another to solve the same problem, what role does the private sector have to play? And, you know, have you witnessed any innovative public-private partnerships that, you know, are engaging the private sector? How do you go about your fundraising? That's my question.
Thanks, Salman.
Yeah, thank you for that question. I have witnessed some amazing public-private partnerships that have gone beyond just funding, but I'll start with one that's related to funding. When we at Hamilton Family Center, for example, came up with this idea of hiring real estate agents, really increasing our efforts, we got the attention of Google, And Google learned about a partnership we were trying to launch with the San Francisco Unified School District and invested $1 million, as well as provided technical assistance and all other types of support. And actually, we had a Google staff member join our board of directors. That program helped reduce the average length of time of homelessness among the families we serve from an average of 14 months to less than 6 months by just this innovative idea of working more directly with the school districts. Google not only, again, supported us financially, they also supported us in other ways. Morgan Stanley, through the Morgan Stanley Strategy Challenge, has provided different nonprofit organizations with incredibly bright, talented staff who come on to work for the organizations for 20 hours a week for 8 weeks and come up with new strategies for how to address problems. There's just Salesforce has provided deeply discounted or free licenses to nonprofits who are interested in using their product to provide more effective case management services or to do better fundraising. There's just been all kinds of bright spots in the Bay Area. I could spend the rest of the show talking about them.
Well, you know, you know a lot of elements of this. I mean, Salman, one of the things that he was pointing out, he was talking about the situation around funding, and Governor Jerry Brown just signed a state budget that, you know, people read in the paper, $3.6 billion for, you know, affordable housing and homeless programs. How much of that money makes it to a city like San Francisco, and what's how much, you know, how much control does the city have over how that money is spent?
Well, that remains to be seen, and just looking at past efforts that the state has made, you know, when Governor Schwarzenegger was in office, a very large affordable housing bond was passed. I think it was $1.5 billion. I don't know. It created 60,000 new units of affordable housing in the state of California. San Francisco got – I'm not sure of the exact numbers, but a good chunk of that funding came into San Francisco. I was involved at the time in five different projects that used that funding to create housing for homeless single adults, homeless families, and homeless youth. So I'm very excited about this opportunity as a way to build more much-needed affordable housing for homeless individuals. I think we should really be prioritizing homeless individuals with mental health issues. So then the Prop 63 funding that's being potentially could be repurposed towards that that need is going to go a long way to helping solve the problem.
And what about federal funding?
You know, federal funding has we've had a slight uptick during the Obama administration. President Obama, I know that his next budget that he's going to be presenting has a very large increase in funding for families. There was previously large increases around veterans. The Obama administration's doing a great job given the constraints that they face with our current Congress. So there's been some help, but it is nothing compared to the investments that were being made in the 60s and the 70s and prior to that in affordable housing in our country. You know, the budget has – HUD's budget is essentially, you know, is a tiny fraction of what it was in real dollars in the 70s. And that is in many ways one of the reasons why we're having this homeless crisis in the United States. There's a very clear correlation between the reduction in HUD funding and the increase in homelessness. Local governments and communities like San Francisco are forced to bear the brunt of these, I would say, very flawed policies around how we address housing in our country. But, you know, we do our best. Just because it's hard doesn't mean we give up.
We are speaking with Jeff Kosicki. He is the new director of the new Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing in San Francisco. He's been on the job for about a month, but the department itself launches tomorrow. So this is a great opportunity to speak with him about these issues. I'm Matt Martin here on Your Call, sitting in for Rose Aguilar. And this week we have been talking about issues of homelessness, the root causes, and the immediate solutions and long-term solutions. We're going to continue our conversation with Jeff Kosicki. Got a number of folks on the line. We will get you on the air. And we invite you to join the conversation as well after this.
Your call is better when you get involved. If you have a question, idea, or experience to contribute to today's conversation, we have at least one line open at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK, toll free. You can also send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment at the show's website. Leave a bookmark. for yourcallradio.org, or you may tweet us at yourcallradio. Coming up at 11 o'clock in a half an hour, it's World Have Your Say, more about Brexit, United Kingdom's decision to leave the European Union, and what does it all mean? That's at 11 o'clock, BBC World Have Your Say, half hour from now here on KLW.
This is Your Call. I'm Matt Martin, sitting in for Rose Aguilar. Coming up on the program tomorrow, we're going to have our weekly media roundtable, where we're going to take a critical look at the coverage of homelessness in the Bay Area and nationwide. You want to tune in for that. On Monday, we're going to rebroadcast a conversation that Rose had with Michael Waldman about the history of voting rights in the United States. That is on Monday. Today, we are talking with Jeff Kosicki, who is the head of the new City and County Department here in San Francisco for Homelessness and Supportive Housing. We are taking your calls at 866-798-8255. We want to hear your questions, your experiences, your ideas about this issue. It's been getting a lot of attention this week. If you have seen or read or heard something that raised a concern for you or raised a question or made you think, oh, here's an approach that we ought to be trying to take to what seems like often an intractable problem, but which Jeff is trying to make an effort to really concretely take on, this is a great time for dialogue. The number to call, 866-798-8255. And I want to go straight to Tim in San Francisco, who has called in and wants to be part of the conversation. Tim, great to have you on Your Call.
Thank you for taking my call. I was homeless 6 years ago and dealt with a system that kept me housed through a few different social service organizations that allowed me to have hotel vouchers. So I stayed in hotels for 29 days that were disgusting beyond belief. The violence, the Civic Center Hotel, just the filth of the rooms, the bed bugs, the horror show. I completely understand why people stay in tents. I'm housed now in a building that is supposed to be one of the best in the city because we have Conard House in the basement and John Stewart manages the property. It's a small building. There's a threat of violence here that is constant. There is filth beyond belief. There are people of many different abilities as far as keeping their household clean. And it's remarkably unpleasant. And I wish that the people who were in charge of these things for the city would go out and stay in these hotels or stay in these apartment buildings and look at where you're housing people, because it's not, I can see why people want to stay in their tents. This is not safe.
Tim, thank you so much. This is a voice of somebody who really knows, you know, what it means when we say, oh, we're going to get people housed, but that isn't the end of the city's responsibility or solving, giving someone any kind of quality of life that can let them build on it. How would you respond, Jeff?
Yeah, that is correct. And Tim, I'm sorry that you're having that experience. And perhaps we can have a chance to connect so I can learn a little bit more after the program. And there's no denying that there's a wide range of housing options that are available for homeless individuals. And some of them are, as Tim described, like the Civic Center Hotel used to be one of the really worst places in the city. It is now, thanks to our friends at the Plumbers Union, as well as private developer in the Community Housing Partnership, has been converted into a navigation center. I was just there the other day with the mayor. It's been totally redone. There's adequate staff there 7 days a week, at 24 hours a day, as well as social services staff there 7 days a week, providing excellent services. But one of the things that I really want to work on is making sure that our city funding is being invested in nonprofit organizations that are doing high quality work. We owe it to not only to the taxpayers, but we owe it to the people who we're trying to assist to make sure that programs are being run properly and at a certain standard. And nobody should have to live in an environment where they don't feel safe or where they don't feel the building is being managed properly. And again, sorry you've had that experience, Tim, and look forward to working with you and other folks who are living in supportive housing to make it better.
Tim, if you can, talk to our producer afterwards. We can get your contact information. Make sure that Jeff will get that. Let's go next to Lisa in San Francisco. Lisa, welcome to Your Call.
Yes, thank you very much. I'd like to commend the city for doing this kind of program, which you've been describing. But also, when you mentioned the public-private partnership, and the $1 million that Google has given and many other corporations. I'm a little bit, suspicious in the sense that I think do they get like major tax credits for that kind of money? And wouldn't it might be much better to have more of a progressive tax system set up in our cities so that these corporations and as well as the Pacific Stock Exchange, for example, have to give a certain percentage of their profits to be able to help San Francisco? There's always a situation where like $1 million and any kind of like support that corporations give to these kind of programs are always looked upon very, very kindly. However, we forget that these corporations basically should be giving more money, and $1 million is really not that much. Also, there's other solutions such as community land trusts, which would afford the city property without having to be at the mercy of real estate companies, but rather property that would be owned by the city and run in a community way. So I'm wondering whether or not those kinds of options are being looked upon, instead of being subject to the budgeting system and all that kind of stuff.
Lisa, thank you so much. Jeff?
A couple things. Thanks for that question. I think, first of all, it's important to point out that Google has given way more than $1 million to address the issue of homelessness and other issues here in San Francisco, as have many other corporations. And I think it is unfair to assume that they're doing it for ulterior motives other than wanting to be good corporate citizens. However, I do think we should look at sort of federal policies rather than blaming an individual company or an individual industry. You know, the largest housing subsidy in the United States is the mortgage interest tax deduction. If we invested the money, I believe it's $80 billion into trying to address affordable housing and homelessness instead of and actually Zillow and the heads of Zillow have said that if we ended the mortgage interest tax deduction, it would not have a tremendous or negative effect on home ownership in the United States. So I also should point out that the biggest affordable housing program we have in the U.S., ironically, is run by the IRS, the Low-Income Housing Tax Credit Program, which, in my opinion, is a challenging and inefficient way to
– Explain it for those of us who
don't
know about it.
So essentially, the Low-Income Housing Tax Credit Program allows companies to purchase tax credits from a nonprofit organization, and they become partners in developing affordable housing. They'll bring in tens of millions of dollars of equity into these deals. And it's great that the program exists, and it has built tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of units of affordable housing throughout the United States. But I still find it a little bit ironic that that program is essentially run by the IRS as a tax credit program rather than having direct funding go from HUD into our communities to build affordable housing in a way that I think could be more efficient and effective. And it speaks to, I think, our priorities and the way we think about housing in the United States. And these things need to be changed in the long term if we're ever going to address homelessness and housing instability across the United States. But in the meantime, my job is to focus on the problems right here in San Francisco and try to find local solutions in the face of all of these difficult structures we're dealing with.
But I think I want to return to the core of at least part of Lisa's question, which is public-private partnerships, and I'm not questioning the motives of any particular corporate leader, but a lot of people think, okay, so we hear about these certain high-profile donations or involvements in certain programs, but what would be the long-term approach would be to increase the revenue that's coming into the city from those same corporations and from those who are not doing their part in that sense, maybe aren't being as good a corporate citizens, so that there's that base of resources that you and other people in the city would actually have to work with that'd be more stable. And it isn't a matter of like, oh, which particular titan of industry is ready to help out with this.
No, I actually believe it's a federal problem. I mean, I'm not an economist and don't want to speak to what would be the right tax structure to address revenue needs on the problem. But I do think that, you know, if again, looking at how we used to invest in affordable housing at the federal level and how we do now, I think that's where we should really be focusing our energies as we struggle to address local issues. I think that the sales tax, which is coming onto the ballot, is an excellent way to generate some revenue. I think there's many other ways to do it, but I don't think, pointing the finger at the corporate sector or pointing the fingers, you know, at anybody is the way we're going to solve this problem. It's we need to do this together as a community. All voices need to be heard, and everybody needs to be part of the solution without creating, you know, this issue has become a political wedge issue for so many years in this city. And we're not going to solve the problem by creating divisions. We're going to solve the problem by coming together, coming up with a good strategy, and executing on that strategy.
Let's go next to John in San Francisco, who's called in to 866-798-8255. And he's here on your call. Welcome, John.
Hi, good morning. Mr. Kaminsky, you were introduced as not a PR guy, but you are coming across in that way. And I would like to ask, before the program is over, that you provide your address so people can write to you concerning the issues. And you say that the homeless problem has improved in San Francisco, but I live in the SoMa area, and I can tell you, based upon my own personal experience, it's definitely not improving. And I'd like to bring one particular problem to your attention. And I have two sets of statistics I'd like to give to you. First one is that the percentage of homeless who are seniors has almost tripled over the last 2 years, according to San Francisco's homeless count and survey. In 2013, it was 3%. It's now 8%. And according to the records of the San Francisco Housing Authority, of the last 14 admissions to senior disabled housing, only two have gone to seniors. So at the same time that the percentage of seniors are increasing in the homeless population, seniors are being excluded from senior disabled housing of the San Francisco Housing Authority. So I'd like you to address those two issues.
Jeff?
You know, I'll address the issue around seniors. And I agree with you that this is a problem that we have not given enough attention to. And part of the issue is that we don't have enough data and enough, I would say, strategic data-driven thinking around how we want to address the problem. We need to figure out, you know, exactly how many seniors are on the street, what pathways there are available to them for housing, and work on developing housing that's set aside for homeless seniors. There's a number of projects in the city like that. I actually helped develop one called Zygmunt Arendt House, which was a beautiful housing development built for 47 senior, formerly homeless seniors who are now safely and well-housed in the city, and we absolutely need to do more of that.
You were talking earlier, Jeff, about the lack of a federal commitment around housing and homelessness over long term. Paul Bowden, who I know you know, activist in these issues for a long time, advocate, very well informed, who was on the show yesterday, was talking about the fact that, according to him, he's just like, the representatives from our city who are in Washington, you know, Barbara Lee, Feinstein, Boxer, Pelosi, people who are, you know, who we have a voice in talking to here, have not been leaders on putting pressure for there to be that kind of commitment, that increase in federal funding. We got an email saying there's been no increase in federal funding, actually much less, and our representatives are afraid to lose what we have in McKinney funds. And he wants to know, what do you do? What would the mayor do to really push on increasing the source of funding and sending that message to Washington?
You know, my experience has been the opposite. I've worked very closely with both Senator Feinstein's office as well as Leader Pelosi's office on issues of housing and homelessness. They have been strong advocates for increasing McKinney funding, for allowing more flexibility in various federal programs to help address homelessness. I think they're facing a huge challenge given the state of Congress right now, but they have been good partners. But I would agree that we need to do more on this issue. We've been working really hard with Governor Brown's administration on this issue and have clearly made some progress, as you pointed out, in the budget that was just announced. And we need to do the same with the federal government. And I would argue have been successful in supporting President Obama's efforts to increase housing funding for homeless vets, and now they're focusing on families. So some progress has been made, not nearly enough, but I wouldn't agree with the statement that our elected officials haven't been working on this issue.
To what extent here in the Bay Area is this a regional problem? I mean, obviously you're focused on San Francisco, but how much do you have to kind of be in conversation with the other cities around here? And how is it starting to not make sense of looking at this as a city by city issue?
Sure. You know, I have just started my job, as you pointed out, and haven't had a chance to really get a good understanding of the work that we've been doing regionally. I know that Mayor Lee not only works with other leaders in the Bay Area, has formed a group of West Coast mayors that have been advocating around issues of homelessness. I very much would like to work with my colleagues in the various Bay Area counties, because it is ultimately housing and homelessness. We need to start addressing those regionally. I know that when Art Agnos was mayor, he was working on trying to create a regional solution to the problem. Unfortunately, it didn't take at the time, but it doesn't mean we shouldn't try. I've got a lot of thoughts around how we could potentially combine our resources around housing and homelessness and develop a unified strategy, because there's this myth that homeless people come running to San Francisco to get services. The data doesn't show that that's actually true. And what you'll see is every county thinks that homeless people are coming into their counties to get access to services. There's a lot of migration and moving around. You know, poor people and nowadays almost people at almost every income level are having to find, move to more affordable places sometimes. And, we need to just sort of think and understand that poor people and homeless people are just as smart and logical in their decisions about where they end up living. And I think we have been seeing a migration of lower income folks to other Bay Area counties. And we need to be thinking about this together. I think the San Francisco Foundation has started doing some great work on this issue. And I look forward to working with them and my counterparts in the other counties. But no real plan yet.
What you're saying there actually raises just a really very fundamental question for me, which is, this is a place right now where it's hard for people who are relatively stable, have a job, they're showing up, they're taking care of what they can, they haven't had a major derailment, don't have a mental illness crisis or, a drug addiction problem, to stick around, to be here. And I guess I just in a really broad sense, when you kind of imagine the kind of city you want this to be, where all the, those 8,000 people that your department is charged with giving permanent housing, how will that look? Where's, what's the long, since this, we're talking about people in a much more extreme position when so many people have had to leave who aren't in that extreme position. And just when you're visualizing that place you want to go, how does that look?
Well, I'd rather not sort of focus on like how I might be visualizing something or not. Again, I am new in the job, and yeah. As we talked about earlier, I'm not the kind of person that likes to give answers because they sound good, or they're good sound bites. Right now, we are working really hard to do this gaps analysis that I spoke about to understand, how many supportive housing units do we need? How many people don't need supportive housing but might really want a ticket back home, or how many people could benefit from these temporary rent subsidy programs that we were using so effectively at Hamilton Family Center. It's going to take us, we're hoping by the end of the year, or actually in November, we'll have completed this plan, and I'll be able to come back on your show and give you real numbers about how that's going to break out. But I will tell you, we're not going to be able to build ourselves out of this problem at the speed that the problem needs to be addressed. We're going to have to look at all of our options, like master leasing, private housing, like temporary rent subsidies, and just to be as creative as we can about how do we help find exits to homelessness. An exit to homelessness doesn't have to be moving into government subsidized housing with services. There's many different ways, and we need to make sure that we line people up with the right exit that's appropriate for them.
Jeff Kaczynski, we have a number of folks who want to talk to you before the hour is out here on Your Call. So let's go straight to Robert here in San Francisco. Robert, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you very much, and I really appreciate this program. It's really enlightening. I'm calling because I'm a 65-year-old disabled senior, and I'm so lucky to be in my small studio apartment that I've had for 20 years. However, my Social Security check only covers my rent and utilities, and I have to depend on food help and other sources, and I have no money for toilet paper or anything else. And I'm at risk for being homeless because there's no increase in the Social Security every year lately, and my rent keeps going up $20 a month. And so I'm wondering what the city is doing to prevent seniors from becoming homeless. What is the prevention for people in my category? That, because if you can prevent seniors or anybody from becoming homeless because of their low income, then in a city with the skyrocketing costs, it just seems like that would be a smart thing to do. So these rent subsidies you talk about, are they available to seniors? How do you get them? Is the city really putting a lot of effort into that area?
That is a great question, Robert, and thank you for calling in. I would like to direct you to my friends at the Q Foundation. They are running a program funded primarily through the City and County of San Francisco to do exactly what you're talking about. It's to help seniors and people with disabilities who are in situations like yours be able to maintain their housing. The mayor just dramatically increased their funding for this program in the next budget year, and I'm sure that they will be happy to talk to you and provide you that assistance. You also bring up another good point, which is that prevention needs to be a really important part of our strategy moving forward. And we need to sort of change the way we think about prevention. I think preventing evictions is an important part of what we need to do as a city. But around addressing homelessness, I'd like to see us look at how do we prevent people who are in foster care from becoming homeless when they emancipate out of the system? How do we keep people who have been on a 72-hour psychiatric hold not be discharged out onto the streets? How do
you basically know here are the points at which people yes. are places in their lives, particular paths where people are likely to become homeless?
Yes, that's right. And we need to really address those various points to make sure that we're really to reduce the amount of people who are becoming homeless, to prevent them from ever ending up on the streets. Really important point that Robert brings up, and I'm really excited about the opportunity to redirect some of our funding towards programs that are going to do real prevention around homelessness.
Let's go next to Arian in Mill Valley. Arian, welcome to your call.
Yes, hello. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. So just basically, I work for Community Mental Health, and we have nothing to offer the people who are losing their Section 8 vouchers and are being evicted. And my question and comment is really, we need to talk more about the underlying attitudes as a society that treats people of different worth depending on their status and wealth. It's a form of a caste system. And I think what we would do well in doing is considering ourselves as one human family where sharing is the rule and the understanding, not the exception. In San Francisco and in Marin, what I see increasingly is people flaunting their wealth and disregarding the fact that we're all connected, that we either come together as one human family or we go down and destroy this planet as one human family. And I would like to talk more about those underlying attitudes in future programs.
Thank you, Arian. Jeff?
You know, I agree that there needs to be a change in the narrative around homelessness in San Francisco and around the country. Somebody asked me at a meeting the other day, what can I do to help address homelessness? And I said, you know, the first thing that you should do is when you walk by, you know, our brothers and sisters and children, you know, on the streets, our neighbors and our friends, you say hi. They're part of our community as well. I have often talked about a gentleman in my neighborhood where I live who I've been talking to for about a year. He's living on the streets and struggling with mental illness. And when the first time I talked to him, he told me he hadn't spoken to another human being for 3 months. That makes me want to cry. I mean, honestly, it's not a way that we should be treating people in our communities. So say hello, be kind, develop a connection with people. I think that's the start for a broader change in the way that we think about people who are less fortunate than us. But I also want to say I don't think it helps to demonize people who are wealthy either. I think everybody needs to be part of this conversation, and by creating sides and an us versus them, that's not really a productive way for us to move forward with this dialogue. We're all into this together, and I believe that people who are very wealthy and people who are of very little means all have something to contribute to the solution to this problem.
So an end to something kind of wonky, but I think it was kind of embedded in what Arian was first talking about, not her broader point, but her narrow one about people on Section 8. You know, that being offered as a way out of homelessness, obviously, but that there's a lot of instability there for people if that's the way that they're getting their housing.
Yeah, I'm not sure if she's working in San Francisco or in Marin County, so it's hard for me to speak about the specifics. You know, and I also want to say, and this is a difficult truth, but ending homelessness does not necessarily mean we're going to end inequality or end people's poverty. I can tell you that issues of poverty, unemployment, substance abuse, mental health aren't going to be addressed while someone's living on the streets. But we shouldn't think that there are many other bigger issues we need to address in our society. But again, I'm trying to stay in my lane because we've got a crisis right here, right now in San Francisco, and I want to stay focused on that.
That is Jeff Kositsky. He is the new head of the new Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing here in San Francisco, and he's been our guest today here on Your Call. Jeff, 30 seconds, a final thought from you in terms of, this department is launching tomorrow. How do people, as this community, stay engaged with this work?
Yeah, I think that it's very important for people to follow what we're doing, to pay attention to, what's happening, both in terms of the work that we're doing, but what's happening in the media, what's happening in City Hall. And I ask folks, I think most San Franciscans are tired of the sort of polemic on either side of the debate. You know, you've got people who want to treat human beings like garbage and just get them off the streets, and others who think it's okay that we have encampments. I think most San Franciscans want common sense and compassionate solutions, and I ask you all to stand up with me and demand that both from this new department but from all of our leaders in the city.
Jeff Kositsky, Director of the Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing, thank you so much for joining us, and thanks to everyone who emailed and called. Sorry for the folks who we were not able to get on the air. I'm Matt Martin, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll talk with reporters about the coordinated coverage of homelessness in the Bay Area and how it's being reported on nationwide. More than 70 local media organizations banded together to bring attention to the homeless crisis and explore possible solutions. What did you learn from the coverage? And did it raise public awareness? Join the conversation on the next Your Call with me, Matt Martin, and you.
Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Laura Flynn produces the show, Malihe Razazan is senior producer, Matt Martin is executive producer, and Rosalie Atkinson is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. Our theme music is performed and composed by Live Human. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.